Hello, everybody. It's Friday, and you've made it through another week with the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Thank you very much for joining me. I am gone after today. I will be in England, scary old England, with a bunch of my listeners as we travel around and get a chance to see some of the sights and investigate haunted castles and crypts and jails. Oh, my. We're going to have a great time. We have a few seats left open for our September trip. We had a couple of unfortunate cancels. And we have a few seats available. If you're interested, you want to sign up, go to darknessevents.com. Darknessevents.com. Sign up right now. You'll also find all the other great ways to see myself or Tim or both of us, like the Michigan Paracon, which is coming at the end of the month. I will literally come home from England. I'll be home for 2 days, and then I'm off to the Michigan Paracon, one of the biggest paranormal parties of the year. A lot of great speakers. Steve Gonzalez and Nick Groff are going to be joining in on the fun at the Michigan Paracon. You can find more information about that by visiting darknessevents.com. Clicking on any one of the banners, you'll find all the information you need right there. I also want to make a quick mention. Remember, we've got a great thing going on. If you sign up for True Crime Tuesday, and you do that before September 1st, we're going to be doing a drawing of everybody who's ever signed up for True Crime Tuesday. We're going to draw three names. And if you're one of those three names, you will get a free one-year subscription to the best in true crime talk radio. So you'll never miss another minute in True Crime Tuesday. And if you haven't signed up yet now, go check it out. It's real easy. Darknessradio.com. Click on the True Crime Tuesday banner and get signed up. It is a fantastic show. You get four brand new episodes every month, at least four. On the rare occasion there's a fifth Tuesday, you'll get an additional episode. And they're anywhere from 90 to 120 minutes long. We talk about some of the most creepy and fascinating true crime cases, everything from paranormal slants to serial killers to mysteries, undercover agents, and more. This is, as a matter of fact, next week we're going to be going beyond Avery Road and talking about some of the strange political ties to the Stephen Avery and Brendan Dassey case that was featured prominently on Netflix series Making of a Murderer. We'll be doing that next Tuesday. Plus, Tim will be joined by Jason Gowan, a good friend of our show. We'll be bringing you the best in dumb crimes and stupid criminals. I did the interview already for True Crime Tuesday. Tim and Jason will bring you the laughs with a little dumb crime, stupid criminals. So go sign up, check it out for yourself. And if you're still on the fence post, go over and check out the True Crime Tuesday banner. Click on it. We have a few things that are up and free so you can listen to them right now. Just a little taste and see if it's something that you're interested in. I think you will like it. Everybody that signed up has really given us great feedback, and it's a fun way to keep both that show and this show afloat. So please go sign up and become a part of that. Tonight, the inhuman haunting of Malvern Manor. That's our topic, and joining us tonight is Josh Hurd. He's the co-owner of Malvern Manor. He's an author, a documentary filmmaker, and he and his team have worked tirelessly to obtain as much factual history surrounding this building, even going as far as leaving everything exactly as it was found when Josh and his team first entered this building. He's here with us this evening. Josh, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, what's up? Thanks for having me.
That's a pleasure. I know this was featured on Paranormal Lockdown with Nick Groff and Katrina Weidman, and I've heard a lot of great things about this location, and you're not that far from our neck of the woods here in the Twin Cities. What are you, about a half an hour from the Villisca Axe Murder House?
That's correct, yeah. Just about 30 minutes away.
How many square feet is Malvern Manor?
We are right at 10,000 square feet.
Wow, so it's just a little place.
yeah, right.
I'll tell you what. You know what I'd like to do, Josh, at some point is arrange an event down there with some of our listeners, and maybe Bill Chappell and myself will come out and do an investigation, bring some new tools, some experiments, and have some fun. Are you open to the public that way as well?
Absolutely. We would more than love that.
Well, Josh,
that'd be great.
Let me find out a little bit about you, and then we'll find out about how you came to Malvern Manor yourself. Have you had paranormal experiences throughout your life, or was it just when you purchased this property?
No, I guess, starting back when I was about 12 years old, I had lost an uncle who was very, very close to me, and he died quite suddenly. I mean, he was 31 years old, and there was very, very odd occurrences kind of surrounding his death, specifically the funeral, that kind of got me, like, asking the bigger questions here. And it's kind of a terrifying thought when you're 12 years old, when I was picking up, books from, Ed and Lorraine Warren, Hans Holzer, things of that nature, and, like, diving into, like, parapsychology, quite a young age. And, I guess it wasn't until, college that I actively started, investigating or going out and looking for these things myself with a group of, like-minded individuals, that's really kind of what started me on this path. Was the death of my uncle, honestly.
Do you feel connected after his death? Like his spirit still lingered some way? I mean, whether it was earthbound or just simply visiting?
I think, honestly, yeah, it was more of a visitation. I remember, specifically walking through my house and smelling his cologne, which is a very distinct smell. And I, to this day, have no idea what that cologne was, even if it's still manufactured or anything like that. And that was the last time I actually smelled that aroma as well. But I remember smelling it and just being frozen solid. The stereotypical hair standing up on end and all of that. And I said his name. And when I did that, the feeling came back to my body and I was able to move. I was able to react. And I was like, what the heck was that? It really sent me on a crazy path, thinking, there has to be more after this, what we call life. So
God, I hope so.
Yeah, absolutely.
I definitely hope so. Although, I think sometimes we get so trapped in the machinations of what comes next that we forget to enjoy what we've got right now. I'm certainly guilty of that myself.
Yeah, for sure.
Have you seen in your lifetime what you believe to be a ghost?
I have seen, I always hate to be that guy and be like, yeah, I saw a ghost. Well, I don't know what I saw. Mm-hmm. I've seen many things that are anomalous. I will say that. I have seen, what appear to be humanoid shadow figures that, seemingly break light. I've seen these things. I've been charged at by these entities as well. I don't know. Like, I hate to pigeonhole it and say, like, oh, yeah, I saw a ghost. I don't know what I saw. I definitely saw something paranormal by, for all the definition there.
Malvern Manor. Talk to me about this location. When did you first hear about this?
This is such a crazy story. So, like you said earlier, I'm a documentary filmmaker. Well, making my first documentary film, it's all on the paranormal. I wanted to open up the film with a ghost hunt. This is who we are. This is how we investigate. A very broad stroke introduction as to how we run things. And I had picked this location in Malvern, Iowa, which is called the Classic Cafe. The Classic Cafe has its own slew of paranormal happenings, and the owners of the place were kind enough to let us in for the evening to film and investigate and all that. Now, I didn't realize that there was a bar that's attached to the Classic Cafe. And so with noise contamination and people, drinking in excess and very loud music, we could not, absolutely could not investigate. And so I go outside and I'm kind of like, kicking rocks or boohoo, whatever, because I figured night one is completely done. I think, well, night one is ruined. We can't film. And I see this guy outside, strike up a conversation with him. And he's like, oh, it's really cool what you guys are doing. I have a place that's, kind of spooky. He goes, it's 10,000 square feet. It used to be a hotel, and then it turned into a nursing home, and then it was more of a group home for mentally handicapped people. And I was like, where is this place? And he was like, oh, it's just right across the street. And so he was nice enough to let us in for the evening. And I'm telling you what, man, like, it was amazing to me because the first 2 hours of investigating, we had experienced more than we had in the last 2 years. It was that active. It was almost as if you couldn't point the cameras fast enough. And I knew coming out of that investigation that I had to somehow get my hooks into this place. You know what I mean? And it was interesting. I said, you know, to the owner at the time, his name was Quincy, and he said, you know, I'd like to open this place up. That'd be cool. I'm like, I think you have to open this place up to the public. Let people come in, investigate, whatever. And that's what we did for the first, I believe, 5 months or so. I was running tours, and, you know, he was sitting back, I think, just collecting money. But it was kind of interesting experience. But then he called me one day, said, oh, I got a new job. I have to leave the area. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. He's like, I'm selling my house, and I'm selling what we were referring to then as Malvern Manor. And I said, well, give me 3 weeks. And I was lucky enough to come across, you know, some like-minded individuals who wanted to go into this little venture with me. And we were able to keep the doors open and, most importantly, keep the building doing what it was doing. So that's kind of how it all came to be. It was like a weird string of happy little accidents, honestly.
I want to know, too, when you hear about this and, you know, you get a guy that says, oh, I'm, you know, right across the street. Yeah. You know, we've got a lot of haunting going on there. What type of questions? Did you ask him why it was so haunted? What was going on? Was he forthcoming with that up front? Or were you just interested in, hey, let's salvage the night and go investigate?
Yeah, initially that was my thought. I'm like, hey, okay, he says there's a haunted location. We can just walk right into. Let's try that. But then asking him more and more, you know, the history of the place, it's almost been lost. And I say that because if you ask anybody in town, like, you're going to get 30 to 40 different stories as to what really happened in this building. And so when we eventually, you know, acquired this building for ourselves, our first item of business was hiring a private investigator. But on that particular night, yeah, he did come forward with some very cool information, very generic information. But the one thing that was most fascinating to me is how the state of the building was. There's still beds in place. There's still wheelchairs in these rooms as well. In one particular case, the glasses are still sitting on this little nightstand. There are still clothes and dresser drawers. I mean, this place was blowing me away. I'm like, this is amazing. Now, there were a ton of medical records, and specifically stating, you know, names and very, very specific medications, which we did remove from the building. Just, you know, we're trying to play by the rules here, and we don't want to step on anybody's toes, most importantly, because a lot of family of these patients still reside in Malvern and surrounding areas. So we don't want to, you know, we don't want to make anybody upset with us. We're just trying to do what we do, I guess. So
that's got to be astounding in itself, that just all of this stuff remains the way it was since this place was basically abandoned.
Yeah, and I mean, that was kind of my biggest thing. When we decided that, okay, yes, the doors are going to be open to the public, we went ahead and we marked, you know, where the wheelchairs go on the floors. Other than that, you know, we know where specific items go, just in case somebody does, you know, misplace them. We don't ever want people to think that they're walking into a museum that you can't touch.
Right.
It's nothing like that. It was fascinating. And I think putting these items where they belong, quote unquote, where they belong, it kind of adds to the integrity of a place. Just from an investigative standpoint, I want people to see the place exactly as we did. Experience it just as we did when they walked through the doors as well.
We've got a lot more to cover. I do have to make a quick mention for our listeners. We talk about it every week, and this is pretty exciting. We got an email today. Hey, Dave and Tim, for months, I've been hearing the commercials for True Car on Beyond the Darkness. In July, my wife's 2004 Saturn V6 finally bit the dust. The transmission went out for the third time, and she had enough. I wanted to fix it, but she insisted on wanting a new car. So I researched the options on a V6 SUV, and she decided on a Nissan Murano. I went to True Car, entered the options she wanted, and was given a price and dealers in my area. The next day, I received a call from one of our local dealers. My wife wanted the Murano in the color Pacific Sunset. The dealer did not have one on the lot. However, they did find one in Virginia. The car was sent down to Durham, North Carolina, at no cost to us. And to top it all off, the dealer still honored the True Car price, even though it wasn't on their lot. All in all, we saved $3,200 off the manufacturer's suggested retail price, and we got a $500 rebate from Nissan. In the end, we saved $3,700. I just wanted to thank you, Tim, True Car, and Michael Jordan Nissan in Durham, North Carolina, for a totally hassle-free buying experience. I wish I had known about True Car when I bought my 2012 Mustang. Thanks, and keep up the good work, from Michael in North Carolina. That is awesome, Michael. Thank you very much for that email. And that tells you all. It is easy to use. They've got over 3 million cars that have been sold through True Car, 13,000 dealers nationwide, and over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available. And as you heard, the average savings of around $3,000 off manufacturer's suggested retail price. Michael was able to get around $3,700 off. That's fantastic. So when you're in the mood to buy a new or previously owned vehicle, please check out True Car and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states, but do your due diligence. Make the job of buying a car easier than it's ever been before. Check out TrueCar.com. Josh, the location itself, you look at a building like this, and I'm looking at pictures of it, you hear some of the activity that's taken place there. It's real easy to kind of get that eerie, creepy vibe to it. But yeah, why is it so haunted? Why is there so much activity taking place in this little out-of-the-way town and this little out-of-the-way building?
Right. And that's kind of the biggest question I had as well. And the question that I ask myself daily. You know, what merits a haunting, especially in this specific building, in this specific location? You know, is it, you know, the clothes in the dresser that I mentioned earlier? Is it the dresser itself? Is it the four walls containing the dresser, or is it the building itself? Like, what is it about this location? And I think, you know, the one thing that I keep coming back to is the fact that, you know, whether or not you get along with a gentleman across the hallway, you're still going to bed roughly the same time, waking up generally the same time, eating your meals together. It's family at that point. And I think that, you know, that building, that setting was the most stability that many of these folks had in what could probably only be considered a fairly chaotic life. So that's the one thing that I keep coming back to. Maybe this was just home for them. So I don't know. It's just a thought, I guess.
What do you believe you're encountering? I mean, so many people have different concepts of ghosts and spirits and spooks and what's haunting a location. If you were pressed to give us an answer, I mean, what would you think is the real definition of what these hauntings are?
I would say what we are encountering, for the majority of the hauntings or things that are going on, this would be your very stereotypical, just disembodied spirit, you know, of someone who was once living. Now we have certain things that are still, kind of anomalous to us. Very small, 3 foot tall shadow figures that will dart across the hallway upstairs on the second floor. We have a very large shadow figure in what we consider the nursing home wing. Now, the nursing home wing itself is very, very interesting This was, it's a section of the building that looks like it just doesn't belong. It was added on in the 1950s. I believe it was 1956 when the building itself, switched from being a hotel, into more of a nursing home setting. So in the nursing home wing itself, you'll find wider door frames, a lot of laminate type flooring, things of that nature that would suggest a more medical atmosphere. In this hallway, this is ultimately, you know, when we first acquired the building for ourselves, I'm not going to lie to you, Dave, I was kind of like a kid with a new toy, okay? So let me just get that out of the way. And I called up my buddy Johnny Hauser from the Velisca house. And I said, dude, you just got to come over here and check this place out. Take a couple hours, walk through the place, and let me know what you think. Well, Johnny cruised down to the nursing home wing by himself, and he encountered what many people do, and that is this very, very tall shadow figure. It scared him to the point that he went out the back door, okay? Like, he was, it's very unnerving when this happens. What generally happens is, you're standing in the section of the hall where the nurse's station once sat, and you can see down this very long, dark hallway. This large shadow man will appear out of room number 2 at the end of the hallway and then charge at you. Now, in the distance of about 100 feet, we're talking less than a second that this thing is traveling. It's quite unnerving when this actually happens. So this is a phenomenon that is sending the majority of people running for the hills. Now, nobody's getting hit or scratched or anything that would consider malevolence or anything like that. It's just unnerving, and it's running them out of the place. Come to find out, doing more research and all of this, now we also got I got a text message the day after that paranormal lockdown episode aired from a lady that used to work at the building. And she says, Josh, you're never going to believe this. But in room number 2, there was a gentleman who was 6'7". He was a nonverbal patient. He was mentally deranged and had killed 2 people in the past. So here's a monster of a gentleman who cannot verbally relay feelings. He can't process emotions like you and I. He's just basically acting upon them. Now, apparently, this gentleman's claim to fame was whenever they were doing bed checks and rounds or anything like that, he would come out of his room and he would chase who was ever doing the documenting. Now, this got to be a problem, obviously. Now, such a problem, in fact, that they had to put protocol in place. What to do when this gentleman were to run after you, because apparently it was a mathematical certainty that it was going to happen. So the general consensus was to drop what you were doing and run, literally run to the kitchen area of Malvern Manor, which is roughly half a house away, because this gentleman would chase you as far as the kitchen. However, he would never cross the threshold into the kitchen itself for whatever reason we don't know. But very, very interesting now that we are able to kind of coincide and correlate this behavior with the shadow man, or whatever you want to call him, as to this gentleman's behavior in life. Very, very interesting stuff.
Yeah, now that's an interesting tie, and not always the kind of story you get to hear from that.
Exactly.
Now, were you able to qualify that she really was there and she would know this story?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's another kind of cool thing is I've grown up around the area. The majority of these people that we talk to, former people that have worked there, nurses and whatnot, I've known them, you know what I mean? Like I've known them pretty much my entire life. And so it's kind of nice that way to it's not anybody just looking for a little attention, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, very good stuff.
So you've got all this type of activity. I know when we had chatted offline, you said that there are people that have been scratched.
Yes.
Some have been pushed.
Yes.
There's been disembodied howls and screams, and this type of activity that may lend itself to believe that it is an inhuman spirit.
Correct.
Now, what led you down that path that it was inhuman as opposed to maybe just patients or residents that might have been a little loony?
Right, right. There's interesting claims from upstairs in the attic specifically. Now, the attic is kind of an anomaly to us. We can see in the attic there is trim, there are moldings. The room had purpose at some point in time. We don't know what the purpose was. Now, also in the attic, there naturally has to be creepy little crawl spaces, right?
So, right.
So there are two little crawl spaces. Now, up in those crawl spaces or whatever, which I've been back there five times personally myself, which is not a fun task. But we're hearing things that are coming from back there, dragging sounds. We're hearing growling. We're hearing coughing, somebody begging you for alcohol and cigarettes and things like that, which if you do come and visit Malvern Manor, you will notice quite the collection of empty beer bottles and loose cigarettes that I have placed throughout the attic, more as a peace offering, but 'cause I'm there every day. But regardless, we're hearing these noises. Now, initially, I'm thinking to myself, okay, this is some kind of an animal or something is going on, right? So that's why I've gone back in there. Now, trying specifically to find, you know, droppings or anything to suggest an animal or an animal itself, and finding nothing. Now, I have found other items up there, old keys, crushed up packs of cigarettes, an old tobacco pouch, things of that nature. Very, very interesting items. Now, when I remove these items and I put them downstairs in our little lobby area on display, things seem to kind of ramp up, like, hey, give me back my stuff type of thing. But whatever is up there does not seem to enjoy the company of people. Does not it's not a very welcoming feeling. I will say that me personally, now I always say I'm about as psychic as a blade of grass, okay? Not at all. And I don't consider myself sensitive in any way, shape, or form either. However, being up there for more than 10 to 15 minutes, and I usually start to get sick to my stomach. Now, this is also quite common. I've had people run out on tours and go on, you know, lose their lunch, so to speak, on the front lawn. So it's very interesting why things like that would happen. And I don't have an explanation. So that's kind of I don't know, my latest homework assignment, so to speak, is figuring out what exactly that attic was used for at any given time in this building's life.
Why do you think that leaving cigarette butts and empty beer bottles or cans is something to please it, if you will?
Well, it's just that's what this entity is asking for. And so that's why I'm just like, here you go, pal. Here you go.
Isn't it weird that it's asking for empty beer bottles and cigarette butts? You would think, you know, leave me a full bottle, leave me, you know, a pack of smokes.
Well, I tell you, Dave, now I have done this. I left two fairly large bottles of whiskey up there, and every week, magically, I'm watching the liquid level lower. Now, I'm not suggesting anything paranormal, mind you. I'm saying some investigators were taking a few pulls off that bottle, and so that's why I just I did away with that, you know, leaving anything out there, because I don't promote, you know, drinking and investigating ever. So
no,
I had to put a stop to that. So
all right, I'm going to make a suggestion, Josh. I don't know if you've done this. Are you a smoker yourself?
I am, yes.
Okay. If these spirits are that interested in that and trying to relive through that, you know, we had a very chilling story a number of years ago, where somebody did this and the response was pretty dramatic. They were smoking and blowing the smoke forward and saying, here, you want to hit, you know, they're kind of, I don't know what you call it, shotgunning each other, or, you know, shotgunning the ghost. And they blew forth the cloud, and out of the cloud you could see the face of the person that they were blowing the smoke into. There was nobody there.
Oh, that's like my biggest fear.
Well, but why? You've got a haunted place, Josh. You're trying to bring in paranormal activity and do it. You might want to set up a video or get like a GoPro on your hat, blow the smoke forward and see if it takes a hit. You know, I know that sounds weird, but if they're trying to breathe in that part of life and that's what they want to have that experience again, it might be worth doing that.
Now, I am doing this tomorrow. I promise.
All right, I want video. If you catch anything, you got to split it with me 100% to one. Deal. Yeah, to none for you, 100% for me when it goes global. That's all I'm asking.
Deal.
All right, I'll give you 3%. I'm not a jerk. No, see, that would fascinate me. And you think if they really are clinging to that, and a lot of mediums have told us bars and places like that will continue to hold the spirits of people that went there because that was their life and they liked it. And they kind of get that high or low off of the people there at the bars while they're kind of feeding off their essence.
Yeah, makes total sense.
Weird stuff. Let's do this. We have to take a break. It's Freaky Friday, and that means it's time to bring another frightening encounter from the theater of the mind. The Phantom of the Truck Stop, a real-life encounter with long-haul trucker Mike L. I'm an over-the-road truck driver, and I drive across all the lower 48 states. I see some unusual things from time to time, but nothing compares to what I encountered in Palestine, Arkansas, in mid-June of 2011. I was on a long haul from Detroit, Michigan to Houston, Texas. This was day 3 of my trip, and I was beginning to run out of driving hours for the day. I noticed a truck stop gas station on the side of I-40. I pulled off and decided to call it a night. I was running ahead of schedule, so I was going to enjoy a long 14-hour break instead of the usual 10. Off the bat, I didn't like the area, but it seemed I had no other choice. The bathrooms were unkempt and filthy, and they had enough graffiti on the walls to classify itself as an inner-city truck stop, even though I was practically in the middle of nowhere. It was also a small shop, with parking for only a dozen or so trucks. After washing up, I purchased a new work knife, some hot food, and I headed out to my truck. I sat in the captain's chair and listened to the radio while I ate my dinner with my windows down, letting in the dry wind. The Mississippi River had just begun flooding, but there hadn't been any rain in over a week. The surrounding area was beginning to look more like Nevada and less than Arkansas. I finished my meal and cleaned up a bit. I slid out of the seat and onto the pavement with a gust of warm wind that hit me. I strolled over to the dumpster, tossed my garbage inside, and began slowly walking back to my truck. I fished out a filterless cigarette and leaned against the bug-splattered side of my truck and lit it with my lighter. I enjoyed the smoke as I watched the sun set below the horizon. A few more trucks had backed into spots, and I spotted one guy walking out of the store with a bottle of beer in his hand, looking around nervously as he quickly strode to his truck. The life of a trucker. Something interesting and new every day. Risking his job over one lousy beer. I climbed back into the cab of the truck, dropped back into the sleeper berth, changed into a pair of pajamas, and I lay down to get some rest. I didn't bother setting an alarm. I just felt sleep creep over me, and I accepted it as I drifted off into dream world. I awoke when the cab of the truck began rocking violently, knocking the bottle of water I had placed on the nightstand over onto the floor. I sat straight up, fully awake. I pressed the button on my truck's radio alarm. It was shortly after 3 in the morning. I reached down and grabbed the bottle of water that had fallen and twisted the cap off and took a few deep gulps before wondering what had rocked my truck so violently. Then I remembered, the wind. I settled back down, got my heart rate back below 100, and lay my head down on the pillow. The truck rocked again, knocking my ashtray over that I had set in the cup holder and once again tossing my water bottle onto the floor. I flipped on the overhead light, slid on my shoes, and grabbed another cigarette from my pack. I opened the curtains, sat in the captain's chair, and shut off the sleeper light. I opened the door and noticed that it had cooled down considerably. I shut off the truck, pocketed the keys, and climbed down onto the pavement to look around. At this time of night, the truck stop only had lights around the gasoline pumps, and their light could not reach the truck parking area. I looked around a moment, lit my cigarette, and then I noticed something. The wind had stopped blowing. I wondered what had caused my truck to rock so violently. Maybe an earthquake? I knew that a few had been reported around Memphis, and maybe I was close enough to have felt a tremor. But that rocking motion, it didn't feel like an earthquake. It felt like a wind hitting the side of my truck with a strong gust. Curiously and cautiously, I walked around the front of my truck to the passenger side. I looked down, and there on the length of my trailer, I noticed movement, low to the ground, about 4 feet. Not fast. I used my keys to unlock the passenger side door, jumped up, and grabbed my large flashlight from an overhead storage compartment. I climbed back down and closed and locked the door. I clicked on the light and shined it down the side of my trailer. There was a young girl standing off into the field, about 10 feet behind my truck. And as I tried to look harder, she wasn't there. Well, like I said earlier, truck drivers, we see something new every day, and this was certainly something new. I began to walk toward the rear of my truck, scanning the field with my flashlight for any trace of the girl that I had just seen. When I reached the back, there was no trace. It must have been a trick of my eyes, I thought. Heck, I'm probably not even fully awake yet. I glanced over my shoulder. There were no cars at the pumps, and the clerk definitely hadn't noticed me. That's when I felt the call of the wild coming on, and didn't feel much like walking into the store wearing my pajamas. I mean, I was in the middle of nowhere, and no one could see me, so I figured no harm, no foul. I stood at the rear of my trailer, and I did my business, looking around again for that girl, hoping that she wasn't hiding behind something and watching me do this. I put everything away, walked to the driver's side of my truck toward the cab. I took the last couple puffs off my cigarette. And then I flung it into the parking lot. I used my keys to unlock the truck, and I popped the door open. Just as I planted my foot on the fairing, I heard a distinct giggle. A girl's giggle. I stepped back down and shined the flashlight around, but still there was nothing. "This is getting kind of creepy," I said aloud.
"He heard me,"
a small girl's voice answered back. I jumped backward away from my truck. The voice had come from inside the cab. Something was wrong. I had the entire truck locked up. All while I was walking around, there was no way that someone could have gotten in without breaking a window. Now, steeling myself for what was going to be an uncomfortable encounter, the least, I took a step up on the fairing and leaned my head into the truck. "Is anyone in here?" I asked. I then hit the switch to turn on the sleeper berth light. I climbed in. I put a knee on the seat and peered into the sleeper berth.
"Good night,"
a soft voice said, which seemed to emanate from all around me. I flinched as I heard the word, and I felt a cold chill run through my body. I slid off the seat, stood up in the cab, bumping my temple off the overhead storage bins. I looked around the sleeper, and there was no one there. I turned around and shuffled into the cab to close the door when I saw the young girl standing outside my truck on the pavement, looking up at me with dead, lifeless eyes. Those eyes, you see, they weren't meant for a person. They were designed for a predator. And all of a sudden, I felt like prey. I reached forward and slammed the door shut. I flicked the lock. I quickly decided that I wasn't staying here for the rest of the night. I turned the key and heard my truck's motor rumble to life, along with the familiar and annoying buzzing that was my air pressure gauge telling me that I didn't have enough air to release the brakes. I took a furtive glance out the window, and there she stood, still as a tree, looking up at me and smiling this hideous smile. I didn't want to get any closer to the window until I was ready to get my truck moving. This was wrong, and I didn't want any part of this. That girl, she wasn't human. At least not anymore, she wasn't. It was almost as if she was something so inhuman that it had to take on the form of a human. It's hard for me to explain, and I feel sick just thinking about it. I heard the siren shut off and hit the valves to supply the air to my brake system. As the system began to air up, the siren came on again. "Oh, screw this," I thought to myself. "I have enough to get out of here." I disengaged the clutch, ground the truck into gear, and roared out of the parking lot like the devil himself was behind me, which, for all I knew, he was. I looked in my side mirror as I was about to start turning right, and I saw the girl washed in the red light, and the amber glow of my running lights. She was just smiling at me and waving. I flew through my gears as quickly as they would let me, and I got back onto the interstate. I drove for about 45 minutes, repeatedly hitting the switch to turn on my interior lights, to look around the cab and sleeper before finally spotting a larger truck stop at the end of the next exit. After backing into the one a few remaining spots left, I shut off my lights and turned on the sleeper berth light as I walked into the back. Then I paused. At the store, I had bought a souvenir, nothing fancy, just a postcard with a picture of Arkansas on it. I also bought a new knife. I had never even taken the knife out of the box, and I remembered putting the postcard into a drawer for safekeeping. The point of the blade had been driven directly into the spot on I-40 where I had originally stopped for the night. The blade had been driven in deep, pegging the postcard to my nightstand. It took me several minutes just to work the knife loose enough to withdraw it from the nightstand. Thankfully, when I turned the postcard over, there was no message that had been left for me. To this day, I don't know what I saw. I hear other truckers talk of strange things that they see on the interstates, U.S. highways, and state routes, but I never mentioned my experience. I've always felt that just by mentioning her, I'd walk back to my truck, and there she'll be, sitting on my bunk and waiting for me.
Beyond the Darkness.
Hey, welcome back to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Tim Dennis and I will be off next week, but we will be replaying some of our absolute favorite episodes from years gone by, some lost gems, including some of our very first interviews with Lorraine Warren. I believe we've got a couple of those available, and Dan Aykroyd and Dan and Peter Aykroyd. We've got a lot of great episodes that will be coming up next week. I will be in England. Tim will be taking over the week after that and bringing you brand new episodes. We've got a lot of fun stuff coming up. Brand new True Crime Tuesdays and more. And remember, do me a favor, go to podcastone.com to find all the great sponsors of Beyond the Darkness. It's because of them that we can bring you our show every week, 5 days a week, with limited ads at no additional cost to you. And if you've heard a sponsor that you want to try out or forgot a sponsor and want to see a list, you can access them by going to podcastone.com, then click on the Killer Deals button at podcastone.com and visit the Beyond the Darkness banner. When you click on that, it'll take you in and show you all of the approved sponsors that we work with, all the ones that make sense for our audience. And each of the sponsors are listed there with the banners linked to the promotional deal and the promos listed by the brands. Everything you need, very easily accessible in one place. So thanks to our sponsors and thanks to all of you for supporting them. In addition, Beyond the Darkness is also a participant in the Amazon Associates program, an affiliate advertising program designed to provide a means for me and Tim to earn fees to keep this show afloat by linking to Amazon.com and affiliated sites. You can link to Amazon through our Podcast One link there. Go to podcastone.com, click on the Killer Deals link, then click on Beyond the Darkness, and you'll find all the information there. And every purchase you make, a small portion of that goes back to our show to pay for all the administration costs. So please take advantage of that. I know many of you do, and I want to thank a lot of you. Some of you are buying crazy amounts of stuff, and I'm glad that you do it using our links. So thank you for that. No, we don't get to see what you bought. We just see that the tallies are pretty impressive from some of you. So thank you. Let's go back. Josh Hurd, our guest, he is one of the proprietors of the Haunted Malvern Manor, which is a really cool place out in Iowa, not too far from us here in the Twin Cities. So I got to get down there and check this out for myself. I swing something with Johnny Hauser, see if I can swing in for a night at Villisca.
Absolutely.
And then come on out Malvern. And like I said, maybe Bill Chappell and myself will do an event there. Now, tell me a little bit about the building itself. Is there electricity? Is there water? Is there amenities at this building?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, we have, part of the building is heated. Part of it, the same part, is, you know, air conditioned and things of that nature. We have a full fridge, microwave. things like that people can take advantage of. A working restroom, which is quite important.
Wow, nice. Working restroom. How does that work?
That's right. But yeah, electricity throughout the entire building. Lights in most areas of the building. In probably 98% of the building, there are lights, working lights. But yeah, I mean, we try to, you know, make people as comfortable as possible, I guess. When they check in, you know, it's a 4 o'clock in the afternoon check-in. They get the place until noon the following day. So you have 20 wow. hours of fun. And it's a lot of house, you know, to cover. And so we try to give people an ample amount of time to do that. And if they want to rack out and sleep for a little bit, they can absolutely do that as well.
All right. Well, like I said, we're going to have to figure something out. And you actually keep on hand people's written accounts.
Yes.
From Malvern Manor and some of the weird stuff that's gone on there. Let's start digging into some of your favorite stories, if you will, that people have had experiences and some of your favorite experiences, creepy, funny, and just straight out bizarre.
Absolutely. You know, one of my favorite things to hear people say, there was this back in the year 1900, one of our, you know, what I claim to be one of the most active spirits is this little girl named Inez. Inez was 12 years old in the year 1900. She was found hanging by her jump rope in one of the upstairs closets. Now, tragic, absolutely tragic. And we know that her and her brother Otto were outside playing. Now, we're talking late December, so Christmas season in Iowa, most likely pretty cold. So she was either cold or bored or whatever, and she says, I want to go upstairs and play. Otto says, I'm right behind you. Well, we know 10 minutes pass. Whatever happened in these 10 minutes, we have no idea. Sadly, we probably will never know what actually happened. But Otto came upstairs and found his sister hanging by her jump rope, and he tried as hard as he could to get her down and could not. Ended up running across the street to the grocery store, grabbed their adopted parents at the time. They ran back. Luckily, they were able to grab two doctors on the way back, and sadly, the doctors could not revive her. Too much time had passed. Coincidentally, one of those doctors actually committed suicide 30 days later. So this must have taken quite the toll on him as well. But we hear Inez quite often. I hear her running up and down the hallways upstairs. You hear her very audibly say, hey, come play. And this happens literally daily. Now, people have experienced this, and I love to read the experiences that people have, you know, with Inez. Now, I'm the father of two small daughters myself, and so I think, you know, Inez kind of, tugs at my heartstrings a little bit more. She's, you know, definitely my favorite of the group of our resident spirits, as I call them.
But has she given any wherewithal to or any response to why she stays there? You would think that's the part that breaks my heart when you run into children's spirits at these places. It's not a happy environment. You know, why would little children stay there?
Exactly. And that's kind of the question that I would like to get to the bottom of as well, is why, you know, why are you hanging around? Why wouldn't you want to go be reunited with, you know, your parents, your brother, anybody? It's very, very sad story. That is for sure.
Now, do you do anything to try? I mean, and again, I'm not trying to put you on the spot or guilt you in any way, shape, or form. You know, right. when I come across children's spirits, I do my best to try to cross them over. I don't know that we have any magical powers or our prayers are any stronger than anybody else's, but I always say a prayer just that if there are lost spirits here, and especially children, I just ask that the angels come forth or friends and relatives of these lost souls and help them find their way home.
Exactly.
Do you ever do that? Do you try to clear, or do you just figure, you know, if they're here, they're here, and I'm just going to leave things be?
You know, the most I have done is I've never, you know, flat out just asked the question, why are you still here? But I have said, you know, if you don't if you don't want to be here anymore, you don't necessarily have to be. Like, you could leave. You could go with your family. That's about as far as I've taken it. You know, and that, you know, I go through that at least once a week, probably.
How does, do you get any responses, especially where it comes with, you know, electronic voice phenomena?
No. Now with her, she is quite active with EVPs. Absolutely. However, you know, usually when I'm doing this is when I'm up there, straightening up her room, you know, on a daily basis or whatever. That's usually when I do the majority of conversing with them.
Has,
I kind of feel Jack Nicholson in The Shining.
You right. know what I mean? has anyone caught video or photographic evidence of Inez?
They claim that they have. Now, it's interesting to me because these teams that claim that they have captured Inez or the Shadow Man or anything like that, or wheelchairs moving around, if they have captured this, they're not sharing. Like, so,
okay.
And I always,
so they might think they've captured something, and later upon further review, it wasn't what they were hoping, so it hasn't made its way to you.
Now, one interesting thing that I have seen, there was just a mother and daughter coming through for just a walkthrough tour. Now, when we do the walkthrough tour, I take them through the building for about a half hour, and then I give them a half hour on their own. So they can go and they can explore where they want to explore. Openly invited to bring equipment, if you're into that as well, and do kind of a little makeshift investigation, if you will. And it was interesting, this mother was video taping her daughter, and she was looking into what we call Inez's closet. As she was holding her hands basically on either side of the door frame, peering into the closet, she says, "Mom, I feel so weird." The daughter was wearing a open jean jacket, and you can very, very clearly see the jean jacket corner get tugged twice, very, very hard. Like, hey, I'm right here. You know what I mean? Like, it was very, very interesting to see that. So that was one of my most most favorite videos that I've seen, for sure.
Now, during the break, people didn't hear this, but you're at home right now, and you started to hear weird things. Do you still get spooked when you're doing these things?
Every once in a while, I do. Now, it's interesting. Like, being at the manor, there was one day. Gosh, man, this was 2 weeks ago. I was literally just filing away the liability waivers that we do. And so I'm filing those away, doing my thing. The building was closed up for the day. Literally, all the doors were locked. And I hear what sounds like something ransacking the place. It sounded like things were getting pulled off of the walls. It sounded like glass was breaking and very, very heavy stomping and like footfalls. Now, naturally, I run out there thinking somebody's in this building, right? I'm going to probably have to call the police or what have you. I go to the lobby where it seemed like was the antecedent of all of this this noise. Nothing was there. Nothing was disturbed either. So nothing was out of place, and all the noise had just completely stopped. Now, that freaked me out a smidge, okay? So I go back to the
office. I can't understand why.
Right, right. So I go back to the office. Now, this is going to make me sound like a super crazy person, but I continue filing. 3 minutes pass, and it starts up again. Now, this time it's more violent and very, very deliberate. Now, this time I have 911 ready to roll in my right hand. All I have to do is hit send, right? And then I have a little pocket knife in my left. And I am, like, I'm thinking, okay, somebody is officially in this building, and, like, I'm going to have to shank somebody, right?
So, oh, jeez. You've watched too many prison movies at this point.
Dude, it was terrible.
Okay.
Now, I go back out there, the exact same scenario. So now I am checking closets, you know, opening every closet, and, like, oh, my gosh. Like, it was terrifying because there's a lot of doors in the place, you know. But, again, nothing was out of place. Nothing was... and no more noise either. So it was quite interesting as to what, you know. So again, like I always tell people, I take a lot of smoke breaks during the day. You know, I have to remove myself from the equation, so to speak.
Do you ever find yourself standing up forcibly addressing the spirits of Malvern Manor, you know, especially if somebody believes they've been scratched or hurt?
Absolutely. On occasion, that has happened. Now, that has happened, I will say, twice while I've been in the building, while I've been there. When that does happen, I don't get lippy necessarily, but I get a little more assertive in my tone, in my voice, and I say, you know, you're not going to do this anymore. And that usually seems to help. Nobody, you know, gets scratched multiple times while there, but it has definitely happened before.
You've got a lot of people that come through there. Is there an age limit on what you will accept or allow to investigate?
No. And the only reason I say no is usually, you know, obviously if they are under the age of 18, we always require somebody to sign for them. A parent, a guardian of some sort, somebody who's, you know, taking responsibility for the child. And honestly, I think it's kind of I leave it up to the families. I leave it up to the parents or what have you. If they are willing to bring their kids in, I have no problem with that. I do change the tour up a smidge. I will say that I leave some of the more gory things out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a little more careful with my words, I guess. But other than that, we really don't limit the age, I guess.
Were there violent deaths that took place there?
We can find 15 confirmed deaths. Now, there's a lot of people in town that say, oh my God, hundreds of people died there. Well, I can for sure tell you 15 died there. There was talk of this murder-suicide thing that happened back in the late 1800s. I can't and neither could our private detective. We could not find any formal record of that. There's one very interesting story upstairs in rooms 17 and 18. Now, I find us, I think we're very fortunate to have some of that former nursing staff walk us through that building and kind of take us through time and what they remembered specifically. In 17 and 18, which are just across the hall from one another, was definitely one of their hot spots for us. They said that in room 18, there was a gentleman who pretty much had this bed check scheduled down to a science, okay? He knew exactly when they were coming up to the floor, how long they were going to stay, and when they were coming back. 3 to 4 times per week, this gentleman would go across the hall into room 17, and he would sexually assault the gentleman in that room. Now, I have personally over 150 documents stating that very, very similar acts did in fact happen right there in between those two rooms. Disgusting things. Now, it's interesting because if you were an administrator of a building such as that, don't you think like job one would be to take one of those gentlemen out of the equation?
Yes.
Yes, remove one of them and hopefully the problem eliminates itself. Well, that never happened, which was interesting to me as to why that never happened. Because that seems, I don't know, like just something that you would freaking do. You know,
right.
But like I said, it never happened. Now, I believe it was 5 or 6 weeks ago, we had Dustin Perry was there doing an event. And specifically in room 17, doing an EVP session, asking about the assault. Now, the response was absolutely amazing and crystal clear. It just said, that never happened. I'm like, okay. So I perk up a little bit because the dude just called me a liar, right? So I'm like, okay. What did happen? Again, a 3-word response that says, I loved him. I'm like, oh my gosh. Interestingly enough, what happened next was something that I've never personally experienced before. And I hope one day I'm able to do this again. But it was 2 hours of a conversation. Question, answer, question, answer. It was amazing. Usually for me, an EVP session is about 10 to 15 minutes in length. And it will fizzle out. For 2 hours, this was amazing. to experience this. Basically, what the spirit was suggesting was that these two gentlemen were, in fact, lovers, and they were a couple. The nursing staff had such a problem with that that they would document it as assault, which would lead itself to why we have 150 documents stating these horrible things did happen, but also suggest why they were never separated, because maybe there was never a problem to begin with. Whether or not any of that is true, I have no idea. Like, this is just me relaying information kind of as it comes in. But the last question that we asked is, do you mind if we share this story with the general public? And it says, yes, please do. So there it is. Very interesting stuff, though.
Wow, I would say so.
Yes.
What do you hope to accomplish by opening up this center and allowing people to investigate there? I mean, is this something that you want to be an educational situation? Or, you know,
yeah.
What do you find most people are coming there for? Are they coming for a thrill, or are they coming to try to get an answer if there's life that exists beyond our physical form?
I would say that's probably, you know, probably like 70-30 right there. 30% of people that come in are general thrill seekers. They're just looking for a scare. Usually they don't last throughout the night. You know what I'm saying? Usually they're there for maybe a few hours, and then I get a phone call, hey, we're gone, or whatever. The majority of people, however, come in there, and they are fascinated. Number one, with the history. But then number two, they're also fascinated by the people, the residents, and the history of the place, which I think is insanely important. Ultimately, you know, our goal with the place is to, you know, obviously continue it doing what it's doing. However, correlate as much evidence as possible to hopefully maybe one day get a few answers. Not the ultimate answers or anything like that, because I don't know if we're ever going to get those. But a few more answers. Like, this place is such a jigsaw puzzle. We're literally week by week, we're getting more information thrown at us. And it's been a lot of fun, I'll say that, trying to piece all of this together. But hopefully, you know, we're able to get a few more answers as to who these people were and really let their stories be told.
What are the darkest locations in the building, the ones that seem to harbor the most negative of the hauntings?
So definitely the nursing home wing, and, you know, with that shadow man. Now, there's also something else that's going on in that hallway that is, I don't know how to put my finger on it. You will hear footsteps that are running up, kind of scooting up next to you at a very fast pace. Usually from behind, you whip around or whatever, and then you'll hear a loud banging from where you just turned your back. And then you'll go down the hallway and you'll, you know, investigate what you just heard. Well, then you'll hear the exact same noise, you know, 30 feet from where you just came from. Like, it's all this cat and mouse crap. But whatever is down in that nursing home wing, I can't necessarily put my finger on it, but it seems darker. Now, definitely up in the attic as well, you get that feeling that you are not in any way, shape, or form welcome. You do not want to spend a good amount of time up there, no matter how much you push yourself to do so. It's just very unwelcoming up there. The place in general, it kind of depends on where you're at. Up on the second floor, a lot of people have been running into a gentleman spirit referring to himself as the captain. The captain, we can only assume, I guess, at this point, is related to or the same person that would be Captain Colors, who was one of the first people to ever take ownership of that building. Coincidentally, he was also one of the first people to come to the town of Malvern and really settle, build a life there. So he has very strong ties to not only the community, but the building as well. Usually when people experience him, they're greeted with a punch in the arm, in the leg, and it's not anything that necessarily hurts, but it's definitely strong enough to get your attention, I will say that. So there's a lot of different things, like in what we call Gracie's room. We know Gracie was a very disturbed woman. She was, I believe they call it DID now. We used to call it multiple personalities back in the day. Multiple personality, but she was also schizophrenic on top of all of that. Mm. So a very, very chaotic mindset, I can only imagine. Now, many, many times they would hear male voices coming from Gracie's room, and for, you know, obvious reasons, they had to go check that out. So they opened the door, and they would find it was only her. But she could shift and manipulate her voice to make it sound like a man. It's fascinating. There was one evening, three nurses sat with Gracie for just a single hour, and in the hour documented 13 personalities, which is paramount. Like, you never hear about that. Medically right. speaking, that is just amazing. It kind of makes you wonder, you know, if that facility in small town Iowa, you know, was the right facility to really facilitate her needs. In her room, she tends to gravitate more towards men, and usually men will feel tugging on their pants and things of that nature, especially if you're sitting in her wheelchair or lying on her bed. She will absolutely let you know that you're in her space. But one of the most interesting phenomenon with concerning Gracie is the disembodied smell of urine that comes and goes. It's very sporadic, and it only happens just a few times per day. But it is sometimes very, very strong to the point where, you know, usually I have to remove myself from the room just because the smell is so nasty. So a lot of
here's an interesting thought.
Yeah.
All right. If consciousness survives the physical form, and we've heard from a lot of mediums, John Edwards, James Von Prague, Echo Bodine, Chip Coffey, that as in life, so in death. If you were a jerk alive and you have not crossed over, you're probably retaining that same personality.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I wonder how many of the ghosts in your location are nothing more than the personalities of this one spirit.
Yep.
Altering. Today it's a little girl.
Yep.
Tomorrow it's a large man. Could it all be the same spirit, but it's fractured memories and fractured consciousness that's doing this?
It's a very interesting thought. Very interesting thought.
Yeah, I mean, that's a weird aspect of this I'd never even thought of before.
No, I really haven't either. That's really cool, though, to think about that. Now, we have, you know, obviously thought, oh, if we pick up a man's voice in Gracie's room, which has happened before, you know, is that just a personality? Was Gracie herself just another personality? You know,
right.
It's very, very interesting things like that. I love that.
I would love to, boy, that'd be a fun experiment to try. And then like a psychologist, it'd be interesting to get somebody in there, a psychologist who has worked with people that have multiple personality disorder, and addressing the different personalities or finding out how was the best way to address that and see if during one EVP session, can you bring forth multiple versions of the same spirit?
Sure. Man, that'd be great. That's a really cool idea.
Huh.
That's a very cool idea.
Yeah, they happen once in a while. I get those. my brain clearly focuses for 10, 15 minutes at a crack. And, ooh, look, a shiny thing.
Check it out.
Right. I'm just so intrigued by all the aspects of this and what the possibilities are. And maybe that, you know, even Inez, maybe it isn't Inez that you guys are experiencing, but, you know, a personality or, I guess, you know, part of what's made me feel better about children's spirits, you know, again, is the idea that maybe they're taking the guise of yes. how they were most comfortable in their lives or at a happier point in their life, and that's who they're bringing forth.
Yeah, I certainly hope so.
Hmm.
Especially in her case, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's gut-wrenching thinking about that. You know, especially as a father, you just don't want to think about things like that. I don't, yeah.
No, not at all. That's, wow, that's really bizarre. Interesting stuff. Yeah, I love kind of when we can have those, you know, those openings and awakenings to the possibilities. Oh, boy, now I really want to get down there and do some investigating and see if we can't communicate with multiple personalities. It would be interesting to take a medium in there during, without letting them know that this girl had a multiple personality disorder and see if they can pick up on how many spirits are connected to her, meaning, you know, personality wise. Boy,
that would be great. But yeah, man, we'd love to have you anytime, anytime.
I know we've only got a few minutes left together. Give me one or two more of the creepiest tales and stories people have related to you from their experiences there.
One of the more predominant then, aside from what we've been talking about, would be this gentleman spirit upstairs called Hank. Now, Hank goes by Hank or Henry, and it kind of depends on the day and what he wants to be called. As you were suggesting earlier, you know, if you were kind of a bad guy in life, you're kind of a bad guy in death.
Right.
Apparently, he would sit out on the front porch and, like, throw rocks at kids and stuff like that. Very stereotypical grumpy old man. Now, we do know that he has a very big problem with females. He does not care for females at all and will pretty much call them any vulgar name they could possibly fathom. It's things that are quite impressive, like vocabulary-wise. Now, coincidentally, he is one of these rooms that has all of these clothes that are still in the dresser. Now, you know, if people see fit, they can open this dresser drawer and maybe try on a couple articles of clothing or whatever, parade around a bit if they want. That usually seems to get the biggest response out of him. Many people are experiencing Hank without the aid of any equipment whatsoever. And it's usually a very loud, gruff male voice telling them to, you know, get out in not so nice words and things of that nature. It's very, very interesting with that guy. So,
yeah, it would seem like. Do you ever have things follow you home from there?
Initially, it seemed like I did. When we first really started up and running with the place, things were kind of kicking up here at my house as well, which I'm only about 10 minutes away from the joint. Now it seems like, it's really not that bad, around here. Now, I don't know what the heck just happened 20 minutes ago. Like we were hearing all that moaning or whatever that was. That was interesting. But I mean, it's, I don't know. I don't think anything really follows me home anymore. At least it doesn't seem like it does.
Do you have problems ever with people leaving Malvern Manor believing that one of the spirits has joined them for a little rendezvous?
There have been a few phone calls, yeah, that I have got just a day or two after their visit saying, I don't know what's going on in this house, but like, things are flying off the walls and like the dog's going crazy, like all of this stuff. And I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, you know, I don't have a clue what to tell you. It's quite possible that, you know, it always seems to me if I ever visit a place that I'm not necessarily familiar with and I'm there actively investigating, usually when I do get home, there's about a 2 to 3 day period of time where things will be active around my house, and then after that 2 to 3 day period of time, things will subside. It's almost as if they follow you home just to be like, okay, who are you? Like, what are you about? And then they're back on their business. You know, it's very interesting stuff.
Very cool. I'm excited to try to get out there. We'll see if we can talk off air about finding a date that works for you. And I want to thank you very much for dropping in this Friday and spending a little time sharing some of your favorite stories.
Thanks so much for having me.
Sounds like a great place. How can people find more information and book Overnight Investigations?
So if they just go to malvernmanor.weebly.com, they will be able to check out the calendar, see the available dates. From there, they can request a date that emails me directly. And I'm usually pretty good at getting back with people fairly promptly. So we get them on the calendar and have them come on out.
We might have to do a broadcast from there some point.
It'd
be great, man. That'd be great.
Sounds like a plan. We'll put links up to that. It should be available on this downloadable podcast, so check that out as well. That's it for me this week, folks. Wish me well. I'm heading off to scary old England to have a great investigation and multiple investigations with some of the listeners. We've got another trip that we're going to be doing in September. So again, if you're interested and would like to join me in England in September, we have just a few spots still open. You can find information by going to darknessevents.com and click on the banner. Even though it says sold out, go ahead, click on it, get the information, because we do have a few spots that opened up due to a cancellation. So reach out and try to get that information and join us for your chance to get out of the world that you're comfortable in and see amazing sights and hang out with some of the most fantastic people on the planet at a haunted trip. It's going to be a lot of fun. That's it for this week. I'm Dave Schrader. For Tim Dennis, thank you for tuning into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.